Aloha. Natalia, can you
Aloha.
Hear me?
Yes. Hi, Amanda.
We are right at our starting time and see lots of our friends joining in on the phone here. So did you want to start off with a topic today?
Well, first of all, hello to all our friends. It's so nice to be together in this way. It's in our modern world, to have a family like this is really, really special. Has anything important come up on the site that we want to address?
No. So, okay. I can share something.
Would love you to share something, Amanda. I was going to say we should focus on what you do every day and then get a sense of what life is like in the dentist household, but perfect.
This is great. This is amazing. You and I are always on the same wave, oscillating pattern of energy. Because what I wanted to share was that my daughter, Madeline, who's 5, or going to be 5 in October, she just started we just moved to Maui, and so we're starting at a new school. And she is at the Waldorf school here. And it has been so inspiring for me to be around such inspired people at this school. I mean, the teachers, the staff, the administration, everyone is like so excited to be at the school. It's a very magical place. I remember when I first walked on the campus 2 years ago, before we moved to the Big Island, I was like, oh my gosh, this is heaven. I mean, there's like butterflies flying everywhere. There's like this grass amphitheater that the children perform in, and just these beautiful kind of old school looking little schoolhouses, and each grade has their own garden, and all of the play structures are all handmade out of wood. And I was like straight out of Anastasia, although Anastasia wouldn't have the kids in school. I know that. But it was, anyway, so we're at school now, and this last Friday, Madeline's little teacher did a home visit where, this is an age-old tradition that they've done in Waldorf for a long time, but it's kind of fallen away at a lot of schools. But she came here for tea, and Madeline was here. And so Madeline got to show her all around her house. And the intention of this is to really bridge the gap between home and school and to really, have it be continuous in that way. So, Madeline got to show her all around. We call Madeline and Sophia's room, because their room is kind of separate from the house. It used to be the master bedroom that was separate from the main house, but we turned it into their room. And we call it Fairyland. So... she got to show Miss Julie Fairyland. And so what Miss Julie told me, her teacher, is that every night when they go to sleep, when she goes to sleep, she imagines each one of the, she visualizes each one of the children in the class, and she sees them healthy and happy and whole and thriving. And what she really likes to do is imagine them in their beds. And so now that she has a picture of where Madeline sleeps, and so now when she imagines Madeline at night, she can see her in her environment. So I was like, oh my gosh, it's like so beyond what's required to be a teacher. It's like, this is obviously coming straight from the heart of a desire of what she wants to do, for the children. So anyways, this has all inspired me to really like up-level our home environment. And what I mean by that is really implementing that Waldorf talked about, a rhythm being like the in-breath and the out-breath, the in-breath and the out-breath. So the rhythm of the day is like that. Like, so they'll do a really inward activity like art, and then they'll go out and play and, be social. And then they'll come in and do stitching or something, and then they go out again. So it's like the breath. And so I've been so inspired to create that for our home. And I have to say, this has been something that I've heard about for a long time and sort of resisted, but it was kind of like, oh, it feels so rigid. It feels so, where's the spontaneity and the flexibility? And, we live in Maui, so it's like, well, what if I feel like going to the beach after school? And, but finally I did it. Like, I sat down, I wrote out a rhythm for the day that was in alignment with that in, out sort of breath. And then I did it for the week, including, mapping out our dinners and kind of like keeping Sunday sacred and making that like a family day and a family project day and, you know, all this. And so this is funny because this is exactly how it works. So I'm all excited and all inspired to implement all these new ideas that I have and really get the household, like, I basically what's happened is I have a new vision for how I want our family to function. And really, I was inspired so much, too, because they talk about all the senses, like all the senses, and they have 12 senses, not, and Steiner came up with 12 and his not just the five, you know, so it's the senses that are not just physical. But so really incorporating all the senses, you know, and I started thinking about my home growing up and how much, you know, the smells and sounds, like my mom always played George Winston piano music in the morning, and we had... She baked a lot, but she also made like sauces, and I was like, wow, that really is what brings me to that warm, homey feeling is when I think about those things that were happening in our house just like automatically, you know, it just was always sort of there. So that's, you know, I'm being inspired by both my own childhood and then by a lot of these new principles that I'm learning about. And so I go to do it, and of course, exactly how this works every time, it's basically anarchy. it's funny because it's not obvious. So the first night I have our dinner plan, and I don't know what I'm going to make, blended soup or something. And Madeline, who never cares what we have for dinner, ever, says, I want grilled cheese. You know, of course, sprouted grain with goat cheese, but I want grilled cheese for dinner. Like, no, you know, Madeline, I've made this, and this is what we're going to have tonight, and you know, doing kind of the Waldorf thing where you just, it's not really negotiable. You just, this is what we're doing. And, you know, because they talk a lot about just, like us being the governor of the home, like the leader of the home. And that makes them feel safe that it's not like wishy-washy. Oh, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? It's like, no, this is what we're doing. But, you know, in a very gentle way, this is what we're doing. So, no, I want grilled cheese. I mean, and then total meltdown on the ground. It's like, oh my gosh, this is the process. And what I saw her as is almost like an outpicturing of my ego resisting change and resisting going towards the vision of knowing, you know, because me and her obviously were super connected. Oh, I just read this thing, Joseph Chilton Pierce, that our heart, they've now, and you've probably heard of this, Natalia, but they've measured the field of our heart, and it basically goes like 8 feet out. Our electromagnetic field that our heart creates is like 8 feet around us. So, of course, you know, my daughter and, you know, she's totally in my field. So it's like, oh, she's my ego right now. She's my ego. Like, no, we're not doing this. This is not the way it's going to work. Not to mention this, so Sunday sacred day where we're going to be home and we're going to do home activities and we're going to work in the garden. And you know, we have this big project we want to do for Fairyland. We want to create a big tree in here and make like a tree house. And I'm speaking to you from Fairyland right now, by the way. Of course, Sunday morning, we wake up and Jason says, hey, you know, Ben and Amy, they're going to the beach and they wanted to see if we want to come. Like, oh, really? Like, this is supposed to be sacred day. You know, so it's like, again, I think, and we ended up staying home and having an amazing day, but it was like just that initial, well, yeah, okay, fine, maybe we could go to the beach. That sounds really fun. So it's like, this is the way that we stay stagnant, though. It was so clear to me. It was like, if I just give up and go, okay, see, you know what? It doesn't work. It doesn't work. We're just going to go back to doing what we've always done. And, you know, that doesn't quite work either. But, you know, this is the process. And it's just funny because, you know, Avatar is coming up and it's about mainly about personal mastery. But, of course, this extends into our families and extends into our relationships. And really, it's pretty predictable that once we catch a vision of our life, that all the stuff that that is really resistant to us achieving greatness and really thriving and living the life that we know is possible, they get thrown up in our face really fast. I just wanted to share all that because it's in alignment with our family crew here.
Yeah, no, Amanda, that's great. Thank you for sharing that. I think you know we have a very big appetite for insights into your life. So share them whenever you can. Now what that brings to mind for me is just this sense of there being a river. Life needs to be a river, a fresh, clean river. And so we need to be ready for things to be new at any moment. And that keeps us in that spontaneity, that childlike spontaneity. But then a healthy child also has a certain amount of structure. Not so much that keeps them rigid or that keeps them, it creates stagnation, but that there's some, so this wonderful balance that, you get this inspiration to infuse your household with some of this wisdom from Shiner and how to bring that in while maintaining spontaneity. The problem is that most people are either good at structure or good at there being no structure. And,
right.
so the bridging of the two, and that's when we become, the idea of being a balanced person is someone who is equally functional from the higher mind and the higher heart. If we're just functioning from the higher heart, we're going to miss a lot. If we're just functioning from the higher mind, we're going to miss a lot. It kind of makes me think about, if the body has its structure, right? Like it has the certain number of heartbeats per minute, the blood flowing. There are all these, what are they called now? They're the things that occur in the body without us choosing to do so. We don't have to manage them ourselves. They manage themselves. But if we go into spaces of anarchy, of madness, that pace in the body is going to get compromised. So we need to make sure to pull away and get back into the piece so we can recalibrate everything. And so it's a wonderful dance. I mean, it's ultimately, it's the what happened in the sort of before the 80s or before the late 80s in the modern family was this rigid structure. Everything came down to a formula, literally and figuratively, to feed the babies, to the way to put them down, this whole Ferberizing thing. Everything went way structured. Even clothing went way structured. If you think about the sort of the blazers and stuff, the women became super masculine. All that of the 80s and leading up to the 80s. Even in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, you saw a lot of that. That military kind of jacket, the great Hollywood actresses and their very severe clothes and lipstick and thing. So the pendulum swung in that direction. And then that program in us to be the perfect homemaker, what makes a beautiful, loving home, what makes the memories that you have of your mom's, her skills, just how she, what a wonderful homemaker she was, and the fragrances that come from that and the environment that comes from that. So, how do we have this deep programming in us of what makes a good mom, what makes a great homemaker, and that it's a full-time job to create a beautiful home, what is beauty? And so how do we bridge this and how do we take this very masculine concept of I need to plug this in because in order to have a happy, beautiful, blossoming household that my children will remember me fondly for, I need to plug in X, Y, and Z. So, but then there has to be all the spontaneity on the other side because that's what they'll really, that's what they'll really love and appreciate. And then again, if you're busy making sauces and baking things, you might not be
not
in your
really
full flame.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So if you,
I know, it's so fascinating. Yeah, because
it's a dismantling of.
Yeah.
Wait, say that again. And you need to what?
Well, it's a dismantling and then finding. Mm-hmm. Who you are within all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found
right.
is that going for a vision basically shows you, like, okay, first of all, here's what it would take to have that. Like, that vision mm-hmm. that you have, here's what it would take. Is that really you? Is that really what you want? Because a lot of times we see or we feel what we would want in our house or in our job or mm-hmm. in anything, but when we go towards it, it's like, oh, wait, maybe that's not exactly what I want. Maybe I want some sort of iteration of that, but my way.
Mm-hmm.
But until we mm-hmm. go for it, it's really hard to see, and it's almost like we're avoiding it. So if we mm-hmm. if we go for whatever that is, then we get to see. Okay, we get to feel. Really, is more what it is. We get to feel what is the right one for us. Where mm-hmm. we fall, and that's so cool, because if we're doing all this to be like someone else or to ensure, that's the other thing, like to ensure that our children end up a certain way or ensure that, anything. We can't really ensure anything. So it's like we have to be doing it because it's something coming from our heart that we want to be doing, that it feels joyful, that it feels loving and nurturing both to the people in our life but also to ourselves. And so what I found, again, is that for me, it's like, go for it and then refine. You know, go for it and then refine. Mm-hmm. Go for it and then refine, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See how it fits. See how it feels.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because it brings to mind the concept of authenticity. You know, we've been trying for our sort of previous experiences over the last several hundred years have been a replicating of what was done before. And so, you know, we look to the past, say, well, how can we replicate what works, what doesn't work? And the much easier approach is, you know, when we do Avatar, we're going to be doing this incredibly huge shedding. We're going to be shedding everything that is not purely human, that is not purely a part of our higher heart, our higher mind, our higher being. And when we do that, we in shedding everything that's not authentically us, everything that's part of the false man construct, we get to the pristine man, pristine woman pristine man, woman experience, expression. And so in that, we have our authenticity. And only from that place can we really get a sense of what's us, what's our authentic expression of being a mother, of having a beautiful household, of being a father, of developing children in their authenticity. So it's only after the shedding is done that we can begin to come to this and say, well, you know, what am I going to do with my time? What is the pattern going to be in the household? How can I create the perfect blend of structure and spontaneity? So it's almost ridiculous to even approach it until you've shed all of that.
It is, and that's funny because, you know, where I find myself in my own evolution, it's like, you know, after lots of individual personal work, you know, it's like we don't have the energy to really tackle anything except for what you just described, all of the programming that we're all like hauling around like a big ton of bricks, you know, all of that. Because once that's gone, then yes, we can like start to, it's almost like, you know, we're in our little cocoon and we're transforming and we're working on ourselves and we're, you know, becoming, tapping into our authenticity and the truth of who we are. And then once we glimpse that and we feel that and we start to get anchored in that, then we can start to look around at our intimate relationships, our family life, our career, you know, all of these other outpicturings, they're really just outpicturings of us, you know, of us as individuals. So it's kind of silly to work from the outside in. Like it has to come from the inside out. I mean, which we always come to on this call. But yeah, definitely.
Well, and it also makes the decisions, the choices that that we want to make so much easier. There's less conflict. There's less resistance in that. For example, when you get into that authentic space and you can see so clearly, it becomes abundantly clear that the things that that the world recommends for our children are just things that are going to create blockages, going to create occlusions to their light, and it becomes a no-brainer. Whereas before, we would have discussions with people, we would worry, we would think we were making a mistake, we would see what the common consensus was, we'd want to talk to lots of doctors and hear lots of perspectives. And you might still want to do those things, but you're doing them with a much lighter headspace and a much lighter heart space. You're just kind of going, you know, you're having these conversations, but you know what the answers are. And it's very difficult as a as someone coming into this kind of work and coming kind of child rearing and parenting, if you're living in conflict, and you're only living in conflict for as long as your mind is filled with, saturated with this matrix consciousness. And once that goes, you will be as more adept at analyzing the rights and wrongs and the reason, things behind things, so much more. But you won't have the heaviness. It won't weigh on you. You won't be made exhausted by the sort of decision making, and the answers will all become very clear. The same, you know, you won't sort of bite your nails over what to do at a kid's birthday party, or this is where, you know, the spontaneity becomes easy because you're not sucked into this. You're not. It's only when you're still sucked into matrix consciousness that you struggle with decisions. And as a parent, I think one of the most exhausting things is the struggle over decision. The other very exhausting thing is keeping up with the demands the school, the social life, the parties, the running around, the here and there, the football practice, the ballet, all of those things will suck you dry and make it impossible for you to be light enough of heart and of mind to make good decisions for your kids. And so when you just release all of that, you're not taking it all so seriously because you know it's part of this matrix. And you might still take your kids to soccer and take your kids to ballet, but it's from a different perspective. You're not all caught up in it. Like it's a do or die situation. Like the whole world's going to collapse if you're 5 minutes late or a homework assignment isn't turned in or you need to change the time for parent-teacher conference. I mean, you're just not hooked in. You're not, and it's not draining you and leeching your life force anymore. You're way above it. And you're participating in a lighthearted way.
Yeah. it's reminding me of Jason and I met this wonderful woman. Her name's Eve Hogan, and she's written a bunch of books on relationships. And she talks about how when we come from either our need to control or our need for approval, so mm-hmm. control or approval, that it's always going to feel off. It's always going to feel mm-hmm. dysfunctional. It's always going to feel stressed, like you just described. But when we tap into our authenticity, which is exactly what you're describing, and she does this, I'll show you an avatar, but she does this movement that just like shows you how it feels when you tap into your authentic self, then yes, you can do all the same things you were doing before, but from a different place. And so it has a totally different outcome. It has a totally different feel. The other thing that I was just thinking about is, you know, what you were, when you were saying, we're not looking back at the past, we're finding our authenticity. And one of the ways that I'm seeing this too, is like all of us are being called to do, is in regards to ritual. And, you know, there's this human longing for ritual, for that, like, that sense of like coming together and doing something sacred and having it be something that you do rhythmically, you know, in your life. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny, and my dad's on the phone, and he could definitely attest to this, but one of the rituals that my family really gathered around was football. I mean, Sunday football. It was like, and so that's like, I just had this insight this last week. It was like, whoa, that to us, it was a ritual. And that's why there was something really comforting about it. Now, mm-hmm. that's definitely not where I'm at, as my dad could also attest to. You know, we don't even have a TV in the house at all. And you know, so that's definitely not what our ritual, my little family's ritual is going to be around. But it's like, we're at this place where what is our authentic expression? And we're now creating something new. All of us who are sort of on the edge of living in the new paradigm or the new, you know, the new world of where we're going, basically. And so, what are those rituals, and how do we come together in a really, truly sacred way, and really honor that desire for coming together, but in a new way? I mean, I think about it around the holidays, you know, around the seasons. You know, there's so much that you know, we could be doing. It's like we all just need to catch the vision for what that is, and then start to implement it. But coming from that heart space of what's really meaningful about those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, authentic community. And it certainly won't have a retail association.
Exactly. And you won't be being sold beer at the breaks. Beer and hot dogs.
Exactly. Well, I think I think that's the beauty of having a common vision. I think that's what creates community, is a common vision. And if our common vision is that which is life-generating, there will be a lot to celebrate. There'll be a lot of good fun to be had. And there won't be all these cords, all these like expectations of others around it. One of the things that I've felt in my latest shedding, because you know, we're constantly shedding and shedding and shedding, getting to the deeper gold, is just you're talking about expectations. You mentioned something earlier about our if we feel like we want to control or we want to find approval. I noticed there are a lot of things that. People's expectations of you, and they can be a huge drain. And lately, I've just been practicing this lovely release of all expectations, because I find I've never really been one to put a lot of expectation on others. I'm kind of okay with what other people do, because I kind of feel like it's their business. And you know, if there's something important, we'll figure it out. But I, you know, with technology, for example, I don't demand responses. I don't like, I wouldn't, you know, I feel like people are more than they're texting. They're more than they're emailing. They're these humans, they're living their lives in addition to what they're communicating via text and email. Or I recently had a very good friend pass away, and I was far away this summer from this friend's spouse, and you know I and my hands were really full with the children and everything, and it was an expected event in a way. He had cancer for a long time, and I felt like I couldn't be a good enough friend to her at the time, the kind of friend I would expect myself to be. And so I was, on the one hand, at first a little disappointed in myself, and then I thought, you know, I actually need to. That's a shoulda, woulda, coulda. That's a program that I need to be a certain way because this happened, and I can't be there physically for her, and my children are demanding so much of me. And you know, I realized that the projected expectations that we project upon ourselves are many times more intense, often draining, than what the other person is probably expecting of us to begin with. But sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes it's the other way around. You don't think anyone's expecting anything of you, and they've just, you know, put everything into their expectations for you. But I just starting to see sometimes, seeing beyond the expectations I was seeing before, and realizing that it's, you know what, it's okay. I can't get to it. It's okay, you know. And just letting things go, and not having these hooks and these expectations in things that even are big deals. You know, in our programmed mind are big deals. Like
yes, because a, you know, if like you a death. Did it. If you did it from that space, it wouldn't come through purely. And in some ways, it could be actually more damaging. Because exactly. If you did it from the space of, I need to do this, you would have been forcing yourself, you know, you would have made a trip, you would have, it wouldn't have been right. But you can still hold the intention that you want to honor your friend and support her, and then just wait until the time actually doesn't feel forced and doesn't feel... because that means you're not in flow with mm-hmm. the universe in the way that it could unfold even more beautifully than the program says it needs to unfold, which is you drop everything, you go and you do what you can because you're a good friend. You know, but mm-hmm. but really, it's coming from that need for approval in that case, you know, mm-hmm. that need for
exactly.
you know, to be that person for her. But maybe now when you're back and the kids are in a better space and, you know, whatever, or maybe it comes through a totally different way. You know, maybe you get inspired to do something that you hadn't even thought of to really honor her and honor her husband, you know, through this time. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it's whenever it's feeling like forced and we're doing it because we should and because we have to and because if we don't, then this is what this person's going to think and blah, 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 all of those end up in creating more pain, usually, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, they're great reminders of what's still maybe lingering, you know? And
yeah.
when they happen, we can use them as a great alchemical tool. And we also stand yeah. as a proxy whenever we do that, whenever we don't react with a programmed reaction, but we actually do what's authentic, and we see where there's the sort of program matrix energy on us, and we don't collude with it, and we rise above it, so we get back in our state that's higher. We act as a proxy for everyone who's on this path to do likewise, to not have to be this, you know, and the term program, if we overuse it, can kind of be confusing. But basically, it's like the knee-jerk reaction. It's what you, it's so deeply embedded in your way of behaving and dealing and interacting that you just do that because you assume that it's the right thing to do because that's what is just embedded in you. And so the more we, and those embeddings, we need to understand that they're occlusions. They are they're blockages, the occlusions that block the light. So if they're there, it means that light is not flowing there. So I don't care how much society commends one for behaving in a particular way, the price to be paid for keeping in lockstep with society's perspectives because they're programs is way too high. If it means it's going to block the light from you, from your child, from your ability to express, it's preventing the light from you. That means it's in effect implementing the death imprint. So it's doing the opposite. So as long, you might make the same choice as somebody with the societal programming, as Amanda said earlier. You might make that same choice, but it's not going to come, it's not going to, you're not going to pay the price of the occlusion. You're not going to, you're doing it from the space of receiving the light, and it seems to be the right thing to do under those conditions. It seems to be the authentic thing to do, so you do it. Boom, you both made the same decision, but each coming from a different place. The one who doesn't have the occlusion is going to be rising in light and rising in the life imprint, and the one who's going to be acting from the occlusion of the death of the programming is going to be descending deeper, contracting, I should say, deeper into the death imprint.
Yep.
It's an amazing concept.
It's an amazing concept. It's very well said. Why don't we open up to our listeners, our friends. I like friends much better. Go ahead and press 1 if you want to contribute to the conversation or share or if you want to ask a question. It doesn't have to be on the topic that we've talked about. And Natalia and I could talk about this stuff all day long. So if there's anything else that wants to come through, any of you, oh, my gosh. Okay, my dad wants to say something. This is going to be good.
Fantastic. Hi, Mr. Dennis.
No, Walsh.
He's not Mr. Dennis.
Walsh.
He's your, what's your maiden name?
Yeah. He's Walsh, W-A-L-S-H.
He's Walsh, of course. Silly me. Mr. Walsh. Great to have you.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, loud and clear.
I just want to say that we just didn't always watch football.
Okay, fine. Maybe baseball.
Sometimes it was golf. Or
no, it was baseball. It was, you know, big hockey when things were really slow. When it wasn't football or baseball, then maybe basketball.
No, that's because your mother liked the sound of football in the background while she was cooking. So I'm blaming your mother for this one.
Awesome.
Oh, that's funny.
All right.
I want to say one more thing. I was watching actually a football game, coincidentally, and there was a dad from AT&T, and it's sort of like you were talking about, Natalia, is the ad, and I didn't quite decipher the whole thing, but it was kind of like two young teenage girls watching her mother shake her baby to sleep or something, and it was saying that, you know, when they were babies, it was kind of like they were shaking their head and it was really not fun. And we'd rather have this tablet that can help put you to sleep because you wouldn't have shaking and rocking and rolling going on. And that was from AT&T that really all these babies should be looking at, be watching tablets and listening to music off tablets to put them to sleep versus a mother singing to them.
Whoa.
Amazing. And that's on national television? How did we miss that? That's incredible.
Wow.
That's wow. Like next step is getting the those little things implanted into our forehead or whatever. That's incredible.
Yeah. Why even look at a tablet when you could just have an implant of, you know, lullabies put into your body? That's a great idea. Wow. Thanks for sharing.
Don't tell AT&T.
You know, yeah. Okay, I'm gonna mute your phone, Dad. But thank you for sharing.
Thanks for sharing.
Totally
that
a family affair, right? You know, what's interesting is I'm also reading a bunch of information about screens and screen time, and just I'm getting way more into the science. It's not, you know, it's not. We think it's just the content that is really the issue, but it's not just the content. It's actually has a lot to do with the pixelation and the screens moving, and but one of the things that I was just one new insight that I had was I can give you two examples. They were talking about how it crushes imagination, like it crushes, just totally crushes imagination. Even if it's good programming, like even if it's educational or whatever, it's still killing their imagination. And so let me give you two examples of that. The other day, because we have allowed Madeline to watch movies here and there since she was little, so she's been watching movies and all, very benign stuff. But the other day, Sophia was sort of like pecking her little face against Jason's leg, and I was like, oh, she looks like a little woodpecker. And Madeline goes, yeah, she does look like a woodpecker, like on Diego. And I was like, oh man, okay, that was number one. Number two, we were in the bath. So now her image of a woodpecker is this little cartoon thing from Diego. Like, that's what she is, you know. So the other one was, we were in the bathtub, there's a really high ceiling in our bathroom, and we were like listening to our echo. It was like, you know, we'd say something and we hear the echo, and she was like, well, where's the line? And I was like thinking, oh, this is amazing. She's seeing energy. You know, I was like, you mean the lines that you can see sometimes when there's sound? And she's like, yeah. She goes, like in Dora, when they're in the cave and they say something and it echoes and you see the lines. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so fascinating. Like, perhaps she could see energy. You know, perhaps there is a chance that she would be able to see that. But it's almost been like replaced with this cartoon image of what that would look like. You know, so it was interesting because I had read the article and it was like, you know, it was like 12 pages long about what screens, not just TV, so it's the phones, which we've had to really shut down on too because we were getting in the habit of allowing them to look at our own home videos, you know, just the videos we take in the car. But I was like, oh, this is a slippery slope. You know, they're wanting it all the time. When they can't have it, they're upset. So we stopped with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's the phones, it's the computers, it's the TV, and it's, you know, for me, it's like, again, finding that authentic balance that feels good for me, but just also being aware of, you know, this is a pretty interesting experiment that we're doing with our children, and because no other generation has ever been in front of a screen as much as this one, you know, and none before us as much as us, you know, so it's just getting more and more, and that's, It's you know, kind of a little scary experiment, actually. So,
yeah, well, you know, it's funny because I've always been very anti-video games, and I haven't let Tommy, you know, Tommy's going to be 11 in the next month, and he's, for the longest time, I didn't let him use any video games at all, and then, you know, he'd go to his friends' houses, and there'd be pressure. So about a year ago, I let him go to a friend's house. I said, okay, you can play some video games, and, you know, it turns out that, like, that's all the kid does is play video games at his friend's house. So, the Tommy's friend. So, he comes back, and I promise you, he had a twitch that we couldn't get rid of for like 3 weeks after playing a weekend or an overnight of video games at his friend's house. His left eye wouldn't stop twitching. He's never had an issue remotely like this ever before in his life. And this twitch was, like, chronic for at least 3 weeks, and it finally went away. And I explained to him that, you know, this is why he got it. And of course, he had to, you know, binge on video games at his buddy's house. But it was totally connected. And after it went away, we had a similar kind of situation again, and it came right back. And so, you know, he couldn't deny that was the cause of it. So you can imagine,
wow.
If you know, the purer your kid is, the more they're going to have a reaction when they're put in front of something like that, because it's the nature of symptoms, just like in the human, in the physical sense. And you can imagine what the brain is doing. If the eye is outwardly twitching, you know that in the brain and in the sort of the systems of the body, they've all been sort of sent into a twitch.
Wow.
So
that's fascinating.
Yeah. Turn you into a twit, anyway.
I had one of those triumphant moments the other day when someone said something about video games, and Madeline goes, what's a video game? It's like, oh, yes, that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Don't, if your kids haven't gotten into it, don't, I mean, anyone who's listening, if you're on the fence about it, like, just don't let it happen. If you can stand your ground and the kid knows that that's kind of the way things are, like, even though my father was Jewish, my mother was Christian, my father converted to Christianity, I think even before he met my mom. So even though I wasn't Jewish, my mother, who was very much of a fundamentalist, raised us kosher. So it was the most bizarre thing because we were like, you know, I was like the only kid at the Jewish country club who kept kosher because they were all Reformed Jews, and they just ate shellfish and ham at every turn. But here I am coming back from church and keeping kosher. But my point is that whenever I would go to my friends' houses, most of my friends were Jewish, and they would be having bacon for breakfast. I wouldn't be able to have bacon for breakfast. And it was just deeply ingrained in me from an early age that we don't do that. We don't eat that way. My mother, on her first date with my dad, he ordered lobster, and she said, you know, she was actually his assistant at the time, so and we won't go into that, but she said, you know, Mr. Barrett, if you order that, if you eat that, I won't kiss you goodnight. So he promptly canceled the order. But so basically we were raised not to do that. We didn't eat that stuff. So it was never an issue. It was just like, well, we don't do that, you know? And so if you raise your kids around, you know, if there's something that you don't do, it can't be that, you know, don't do anything. But like, if there's a certain thing that you really believe in, and I really believed in not letting Tommy play video games. Of course, his dad's like, oh, you know, he's a boy, you gotta let him. And so it started to kind of get under his skin. And I could see, you know, he would like take Lawrence's computer and find different video games he would download, and I wouldn't know anything about it. I, you know, didn't realize he was downloading video games. I mean, what a terrible parent I am! I didn't even realize it. But it becomes then part of his thing, you know. Like so he starts to really like it, and like most boys do. So it's, you know, it was hard to kind of go back, even though now we've mutually agreed that it really needs to be off limits because it's not good for him, and he's a super creative kid with a really bright mind, and it's just going to squash any chance he has at, you know, at being able to use those natural faculties of his. So, but if you haven't gone down that road, let me tell you that you can, if you can prevent it from happening, and you just keep it as one of those tried and true, what's the term I like to use, sort of sacred things that you do. Don't like just that your kid doesn't play video games. They don't have to play them. You know, don't be convinced that they have to because it's part of some sort of new way of engaging. It's
well,
all garbage.
And as you do this, within wherever you're at, still continue to intend to surround yourself with, if this is your desire. I mean, I know this was mine. It was like, you know, I was like, I can fight this my whole life, and I know I could do it, or I could hold the vision that there's something different, that there's people like me that I could find, that you know, we would all be doing things very similarly. So if that's where you feel pulled, keep that as a possibility too, because it is a possibility. I mean, one of the things also at this new school, the woman who makes their snack every morning is explaining the process that she uses. First of all, she's sprouting all the grain. They're only using the highest quality grains that we talk about at Life Force Families, all organic produce, everything handmade, like that day. Like she sprouts things overnight, like on her own time. Like, you know, it's like, and I was sitting there literally like wanting to cry in the parents' meeting. I'm sure it was the woman over here that cries all the time because I'm so moved at like how beautiful all this is, you know. But I just had to tell her, like, this has been my dream, to be in a place where like I'm with like-minded people, that I don't have to like be like, hey, you know, maybe we shouldn't be giving our kids X, Y, and Z. Maybe this would be really important to give them some proper nutrition throughout the day, you know. And it's like, whoa, I found that. Like, I have found that. I feel like I'm in that place now. And it's certainly been a journey, but it's been so worth it. So, again, in any of you that, like, have that too, you know, it's like we can stay in where we're at, and maybe you can find that where you're at. I'm not saying you have to move across the world to find it, but, you know, maybe you can find it there. But keep that too. Keep that vibration that there are other people like you. There's a bunch of us on the phone right now. We all would want basically the same kinds of things for our children and for our lives. So you can find them and then create sort of the reality that you want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have a hand raised.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Great.
Okay. Laura, you have the mic.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, Laura. Hi. Yes, we hear you.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you, Natalia, for the story about Tommy and the Twitch. Last week, I was doing an excessive amount of computer work, building a new website. And the weekend came, and I was so out of sorts. I did not feel like myself, and I had this terrible twitch in my left eye. And it was so bad, I couldn't even relax to read. My eye just kept twitching and twitching and twitching. And it didn't occur to me until you told that story, that maybe the whole thing, the bad mood, the irritability, the twitch, I just felt like I wanted to get out of my skin, was maybe the computer work, the screen time. So thank you for relaying that.
Yeah. Oh, my
God. Yeah, that could definitely be it.
Natalia, you need to write a blog called Tommy and the Twitch.
It sounds like a Roald Dahl book. There's the Twitch. That's one of the greatest books ever by Roald Dahl. But, okay, no, I'm so glad that helped to eliminate it. Yeah, Tommy and the Twitch.
Thanks for sharing, Laura.
Okay.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, thank you so much. And, you know, like you said, Natalia, the more clean the system gets, you know, the more all of us take breaks from that reality when we go back into it, we're going to see how it affects us. Whereas before, we were pretty numb. Well, I'll speak for myself. I was pretty numb to how screens were affecting me until I, you know, was able to step away from it and then, you know, and then see. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you much rather be the canary in the coal mine than the sort of, I suppose, calcified pigeon in the coal mine. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if you make it out of the coal mine alive, then you get to, you know, be a canary rather than, right, the calcified pigeon. I mean, it's better, I guess, if it doesn't make sense, I'm saying is that it's better to be highly sensitized in this world and know when something's offensive to the body because you have a really immediate reaction than to not pick it up at all.
Yeah. Hey, Natalia, I was telling Madeline about your save a pig, eat a pineapple. And there are a couple other ones that you did. And we were trying to come up with a bunch more. But can you share some of those cute things that you say to your family? Because everyone on this call maybe hasn't been able to see the EGD video.
Okay, let's see. Save a pig, eat a pineapple is a big one. Save a cow, eat a carrot. Save a chicken, eat a chickpea.
Awesome. Madeline and I, one thing we weren't coming up with as cute ones as you, but she was going wild with it. We were having so much fun.
Well, of course, what my son will say is, he'll say this very tongue-in-cheek, very sort of cheekily to me, I'll say, did you save a pig and eat a pineapple? He says, no, Mom, I saved a pineapple and ate a pig.
Oh, no.
But even if he didn't, he'll just say it to be, you know, to be funny. But
awesome. That's so cute. That's cute. And that's the type of authenticity we're talking about, because when you can bring that to your family, then it's like you... It's not that, you know, don't eat the bacon at this breakfast, you know, and all that, like, stress around it. It's like, you know, you can bring that lightness, and they can feel that, too. And it has such different energy behind it, which I think, obviously, it's coming from Natalia's silly, authentic place within, which she has a lot of, by the way.
Within the center of Manhattan with all the madness. It's just pretty, like, it's like a vortex of a really crazy epicenter here. But, it's funny because, well, I won't name names, one of my children, said to me the other day, he says, you know, Mom, I have some problems with my body. He says, you know, I'm really kind of gassy. I can't remember what the other thing was. It was something else that was relatively benign, but it was a chance for me to get in there and be like, well, you know, if you eat things that are, like, decaying inside your body, you're going to have a lot of gas. And he goes, Mom, but it's not decaying. It comes out. And I'm able to explain to him, well, actually, only a small percentage of it comes out, you know, because he thinks that when he poos, he's getting rid of whatever he's consumed. And and we all know that that's not the case, because it's dehydrating, the body's dehydrating all this stuff, and the less water-containing it is and the more of the death imprint it has, the more it's going to stay inside you. And so, you know, we get to have this conversation, and it gets him kind of, even though he's walking away thinking, well, I don't want to give this up, he's at least having to confront the fact that there's, you know, this symptom that he thinks there's something wrong with his body, when really there's something wrong with what he's consuming happening in his very long intestinal tract. And we got to have this whole conversation about, you know, carnivorous animals versus herbivores and omnivorous animals, and the difference in why in our very long digestive tract, you put a carcass in there and it's going to putrefy and, you know, and decay, and that's going to, you know, have all these symptoms associated with it. And, you know, at least it gives him food for thought, so to speak, something to chew on, as it were.
Awesome. Well, we have a few more minutes. If any of you would like to ask a question or make a comment or share a story or anything, go ahead and press 1. And if not, I'm seeing a lot of the names on the screen. we're going to be with you next week in New York. I can't believe this time next week I'm going to be in New York, and we're going to be a few days away from Avatar, which is just so exciting. And we're going to get to meet a lot of you in person, which is just, it's going to be amazing. It really is going to be an incredible event, and so excited that so many of you are making the trip. And for those of you that will be connecting with virtually, it'll just be, I feel like we'll all be in the same living room together, which is going to be amazing.
It is going to be fantastic. I'm super, super excited about it. I'm first excited to see you, Amanda. I haven't seen you, gosh, I don't know, too many years now. It's been a while. And we're going to have some fun. And then it's going to be a lot. I think some of you are staying at the Affinia Gardens, which is just across the street. And I'm in a beautiful new space. So, we're overlooking the city. You've got a great, big, open, very, very fun space to have this event in, which is, I think, going to be part of taking the leap is going to be being up and out of the sort of being close to the street. We're up high. We're on the 21st floor. We've got this vast view of the city, and it's great. We're in the neighborhood that has, we've got all the health, the juice joints around. We've got Juice Press across the street onto one end. We've got Health Nuts around the corner. Got Organic Avenue locations close by. There's just, we get the best wheatgrass juice in the world is right here at Health Nuts. They'll make it for you every day. So it's going to be a little bit of a melting pot of, it's, you know, if you want to think about it, I feel like it's like the cauldron of enlightenment is what it's going to be like. So I'm really excited to share that. Basically, you know, the part of the fun is passing along all that we've assimilated and come to embody, because we've taken these huge leaps, and we just want to pass that along so that we can all be elevating together and being freed of this cage together, because there's so much more to enjoy once the shedding is done, once the cage is dismantled, and we can start to see things as they really are.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as parents, the work is even more crucial for us, you know, to continue to make these leaps as individuals, so that we're really creating this fertile field for the next generation to take things to an entirely different level that we probably can't even imagine at this point. But, yeah, it's very exciting. And, Natalia, when you're talking about juice bar right there and wheatgrass, it's like, oh, those like, conveniences of the city that I haven't had for a few years. That's going to be like so amazing. Just be like, oh, I'm going to go get my wheatgrass next door, which, you know, there's lots of benefits to being out here, and having those kinds of conveniences is not one of them, though. But.
Well, you know what's funny, though, is that when I was out at the beach this summer, there were days where I just, first of all, I didn't feel the need for the wheatgrass very much at all. I mean, I was doing it because I'd like to do it. There were some days I just didn't do it. And there were days when I, and this is off the charts for me, because I really, every day I really like to have my juice. You know, that's sort of without question. I need my juice. I want my juice at, you know, sometime around between 4:30 and 5:30, 6 o'clock. And there were days I just asked myself, like, you know what, I just don't even need to have a juice today. And some of those days I would have it anyway, and some of them I didn't have it at all. And that was mind-boggling. But why is that the case? It's the case because I was on the beach, in the alkalinity, drinking in the ozone. I mean, it was the most, you know, it was the cleanest environment I've been in, you know, for a long time. Being in the city, there's this distinct need for the high vibration to take it in, to bring the alkalinity into the body from without. And, you know, and because the air isn't providing it, the, you know, I'm not in the seawater. It's just completely, what I'm swimming in, what I'm breathing in is totally different. And it was just really amazing to have that experience. Be like, you know what? I don't even need my juice today. I'm fine.
Wow.
And then
I'm
to come
so
back.
I'm so glad you're saying that, Natalia. Yeah, I'm so glad you're saying that, because I was curious about that, because that happens to me here a lot, you know, where it's just like, I don't feel like I need it, you know, it's just, and that's interesting to know that, and it'll be really fun to play with it, you know, when I'm in the city, the difference of how I feel in terms of my, you know, my desire to consume more alkalinity, you know, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was making a beeline to the wheatgrass when I got back. That's how much I knew I had to have it, and it was night and day. Yeah.
Whoa. Well, very fun. I kind of feel like, please don't take offense to this, Natalia. I know you will. I feel like Trinity from The Matrix. Like, I feel like I need to come, like, with my black leather, like, bodysuit. Like, I feel like I'm, like, going into the heart of The Matrix in New York, and it's fun. Like, having been in, you know, not in The Matrix for a while, it's like, to me, it's going to be really fun to experience and, you know, see it from a whole different vantage point. Yeah.
It will be a different vantage point. What will surprise you is that your field has now become radiant, and so you're not negatively impacted by the things that would have negatively impacted you when you were more receptive. You're no longer the egg. You're the sun now. And so you can go anywhere, be anywhere. You can transmute anything by the nature of what you are and the frequency that you're holding.
Mm. Well, fun.
You'll be fine. You'll have fun with it.
Very,
yeah.
Yay,
you'll get,
good.
You'll get to go into the sort of the dregs of life and just be like, okay, I'm cool here too. Okay.
Awesome. Okay, well, love to all of you, community that we have here, this Life Force Gamma community that I was really thinking about it this morning. It's like, this has been one constant that we have been doing for like a couple years now, this call once a month. So it's wonderful to travel with you and to continue to share with you and just to see your names on our little computer screen and know that that you're out there and that we're all connecting. And that's what I love, that we've incarnated at this time where we can use technology in this way to really connect with each other. And eventually we won't need to do this. We'll all be connecting everywhere we're at. But in the meantime, while we're on the transition bridge, thank God for Maestro conference calls and, you know, this technology that we have. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Natalia, for everything. And I'll see you next week.
Can't wait to see you.
I'll see as many as possible of you next week. It's going to be so fun. All right.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Bye for now.
Aloha, everybody.